This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Today, the United Nations announced that it and Ethiopia's government have signed a deal.
That's reporter Kara Anna on hopes for those trapped in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Details coming up also. Nigeria confronts a second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. And UN officials say that South Sudan's latest peace efforts have stalled. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Progress is made in efforts to help civilians in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Reporter Kara Anna with the Associated Press has more.
Today, the United Nations announced that it and Ethiopia's government have signed a deal to allow unimpeded humanitarian access to the embattled Tigray region. That's where fighting has continued for a month now. And that fighting and a state of emergency that was imposed essentially meant that the region of 6 million people has been cut off from the world for the past month.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is striking a victorious note and has said major military operations in Tigray are over. However, the regional leader, Debretsion Gebremichael, said yesterday that fighting persisted and that the Tigray People Liberation Front intends to keep fighting the Ethiopian federal troops. A communication blackout means it is not possible to verify the claims of either side. There are reports that the Abiy intends to establish a caretaker administration in Tigray. The TPLF dominated Ethiopian politics for nearly 3 decades, before anti-government protests brought Abiy to power in 2018. Since then, TPLF leaders have complained of being removed from top positions and targeted in corruption prosecutions. Tensions between the TPLF and the federal government rose when the region held elections in September, which the central government said were illegal. On November 4th, Ethiopia began the military operation in Tigray after accusing the TPLF of attacking federal military facilities. The federal government says its operation targets only the TPLF leadership and is intended to enforce the rule of law. The TPLF says the government is waging war on the people of Tigray. More than 40,000 people have fled Tigray over the 4 weeks of fighting, most of them going to Sudan. The United Nations has warned their situation is precarious as camps become crowded. And Nava Mohadin reports from the Al-Qadarif Sudan that the refugees face a new threat, a COVID-19 outbreak.
Over the past month, more than 40,000 Ethiopians have fled clashes in Tigray to camps in eastern Sudan. Those arriving are placed in 3 camps in the cities of Gadarif and Kasala. 32-year-old Isfai Ali and his pregnant wife fled Humara to get away from the fighting, but now face a possible COVID-19 outbreak in one of the camps. He says in Humara some cases of coronavirus were discovered, but the government controlled it. Because of the internal conflict, he fled to Sudan. Yet he's so worried about the spread of COVID-19 here in the camp due to the living standards, rooms and shortage of the water. Social distancing is difficult in the camps, where at least 6 refugees stay in each small tent or room. People are gathered in large groups to get food, water or blankets, without enough water or soap. Health workers warn refugees of the coronavirus risk and teach them methods to prevent the spread of the virus. Isolation centers are also being built. Yusuf says high population and the big number of refugees represent a risk factor for the spread of the virus. There is a possibility some suspected cases fled isolation centers in the war zone and came to the camps. A second wave of COVID-19 is sweeping across Sudan, which reports at least 17,000 registered cases and a high mortality rate. The government has shut down universities and schools and is considering whether to impose more restrictions. The UN Refugee Agency is calling for more international aid to deal with the crisis. Refugees are trying to adjust, constructing small markets inside the camps and close to hosting villages. Meanwhile, the Sudanese government is setting up a new refugee camp 250 kilometers from Khartoum to help ease overcrowding in the existing camps. Naba Muhyiddin for VUA News, Umrakuba Refugee Camp, Al-Qadarif.
And for more detailed look at what's going on in Tigray, VOA's Jason Patinkin reached out to William Davison, senior analyst for Ethiopia at the International Crisis Group.
I think the claim by the federal government is obviously, you know, looks well-founded. The federal forces seem to be in control of major Tigrayan cities and have made, you know, very significant territorial gain since the war started, you know, culminating in moving into Mekelle. But we do not seem to have had any major urban warfare. So it looks like the Tigrayan leadership and whatever state the Tigrayan forces in, you know, they've withdrawn from Mekelle. We do know those forces have been, you know, overpowered and outnumbered to some extent by the federal forces, but the leadership, Tigrayan leadership, has committed to keep fighting. So now it's the question of, you know, what state are those Tigrayan security forces in? What level of support do they have from the broader Tigrayan governing establishment and the society?
One of the big reasons, or the big reason, why the government kind of launched the big offensive after the fighting first broke out was to capture the TPLF leadership. Where do things stand in terms of those goals?
Well, I think we have to assume that the absolute priority next for the federal government, the federal forces, is to capture those Tigrayan government and military officers who are on the arrest warrant list. You know, along with that, there will be this attempt to maintain and extend security control and then begin to establish this provisional government, which will administer Tigray in place of the former regional government. You know, I think in terms of that manhunt, we hear it's ongoing, but no successes yet. And there are reports of continued clashes. So we will have to see how that unfolds. And then this provisional government will be set up. And the plan there is to sort of, you know, to work with the lower structures of Tigray's government and replace the upper tiers. And again, that will be a question of, you know, just how will Tigray's existing political establishment react to this federal intervention and the government imposed from Addis Ababa.
It's hard to tell because there isn't access, but do we have any indications of what military capabilities the TPLF still has? You know, it's made some claims about shooting down a plane, about whether it can still launch rockets to Eritrea or elsewhere, or just whether it still has the fuel or the weapons to fight an insurgency. What do we know?
Well, I think there are signs that it still has those missile launchers and missiles, with those directed at Asmara on Saturday, I believe. And there's also a suggestion that it's still got a certain amount of firepower and heavy weaponry. But obviously it's very hard to verify that. It's also, you know, hard to tell, you know, just what sort of losses both sides have had. We have no ballpark fatality casualty figure yet. So, you know, that will obviously be very important for the state of the Tigrayan security forces. We expect supply lines still to be a major issue, particularly fuel. You know, the sort of bullish supporters of the Tigrayan resistance, they will talk about the ability to capture fuel from the enemy as they defeat them. But of course, we'll have to see about that. And then perhaps the continued armed resistance might be in a stronger position in terms of their sort of hold on the countryside and plenty of support from local militia. But then at the same time, if the provisional government is able to sort of get up and running, then maybe it will be able to exert some control over the countryside, you know, through the sort of levers of the government and the state and food distribution and that type of thing.
That was William Davison, a senior analyst for Ethiopia, the International Crisis Group. He was speaking to VOA's Jason Patinkin. Ghana's essential workers, including police, health workers, and military personnel, cast their votes Tuesday ahead of next Monday's national elections. President Nana Akufo-Addo is facing 11 challengers, including former President John Mahama. The opposition leader is expected to be the president's strongest rival in the West African nation's election. The Congo-based media outlet African News cites a recent survey by the Center for Democratic Development that shows incumbent President Akufo-Addo held a slight lead over Mahama. Both candidates made reviving Ghana's economy a cornerstone of their campaigns. The Electoral Commission said so-called COVID-19 ambassadors will be located at all 311 voting centers to make sure voters follow protocols, including wearing masks, getting temperature checks, and are sanitizing their hands. Ghana has confirmed more than 51,600 coronavirus cases and 323 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University, which tracks COVID-19 globally. In Nigeria, authorities are worried that coronavirus infections may spike again as millions ignore safety measures such as wearing face masks and social distancing. A jump in infections could force another lockdown, hurting the economy, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
45-year-old Nigerian butcher Martin Olaya strongly strikes the blades of his cutting knives against the other in order to attract the attention of customers. It's been months since the coronavirus pandemic lockdown was lifted, and this Utako market in Abuja is again operating at full capacity. But among many concerns of business owners like Olaya, the coronavirus pandemic is the least of them. Market is really bad. We don't know what the coronavirus is. We haven't seen it. There's nothing that concerns Nigeria with that. God will not allow it. Many traders like Olaya continue to doubt the coronavirus ever existed and therefore are flouting safety rules. Abuja resident Dorothy Wozo, who's shopping for groceries, is one of very few people wearing a face mask. She says she's not happy that others are not taking responsibility.
Look around you. You can count the number of people wearing face masks. People are touching meat. People are touching foodstuff. They don't sanitize their hands.
Nigeria has recorded more than 67,400 cases of the coronavirus since its first one in February. The Nigeria Center for Disease Control says the country reached its peak infections between July and August and then recorded a downward trend. But officials say coronavirus infections began rising again in November as many countries began battling a second wave of the infection. Chinwe Achu, a director of the NCDC, worries that citizens, especially younger people, have stopped being vigilant.
Above 21 years and less than 50 years are more likely not to adhere to COVID-19 prevention protocols because they are usually the ones that don't have the severe symptoms. But these are the people that are likely to have the disease and transmit it to the vulnerable elderly groups or people with comorbidities who could die from it.
COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. Experts attribute the new rise in cases to the NSARS protests last month, which saw thousands of young Nigerians march against police brutality. The use and sales of personal protective equipment have also dropped significantly. Nigerian authorities are trying to avoid imposing strict lockdowns by urging citizens to adhere to COVID-19 guidelines. President Muhammadu Buhari has warned the country's already fragile economy may not withstand another lockdown. Economics lecturer Anas Ibrahim agrees with the president.
About 60 to 65% of three sectors that we have in Nigeria now, they actually decline. They are not performing. They are not actually, you know, lucrative to actually boost the economy in order to create more job opportunities, a lot of revenue to the government.
Last week, Nigeria's Bureau of Statistics announced the country had plunged into a recession after its economy contracted by 3.6% due to coronavirus disruptions. Authorities say they are hopeful that the economy will begin to recover early next year, but that citizens must act responsibly. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
The Associated Press quotes United Nations officials as saying that South Sudan's latest peace efforts have stalled. The AP says the experts point out that South Sudan's president Salva Kiir has locked opposition leader and now first vice president Riek Machar out of the government's decision-making process. Machar's people say the first vice president has been de facto under house arrest. After gaining its independence from Sudan in 2011, there were high hopes for South Sudan. However, in 2013, it slid into violence with forces loyal to Salva Kiir battling those loyal to Riek Machar. the civil war has killed nearly 400,000 people and displaced millions. The peace deal that now is stalling was reached in 2018 after intense international pressure. Scores of undocumented Zimbabweans were recently arrested at the South African border after attempting to illegally cross into the country or to smuggle goods. As Arigando reports, the arrests were the result of a South African National Defense Force operation.
Over 230 Zimbabweans illegally crossing into South Africa were arrested in a night operation by the South African National Defense Forces, SANDF, over the weekend. 32 of the undocumented persons were apprehended at a roadblock while the others were apprehended at the border. The defense forces seized contraband, including a car with a market value of around 500,000 rands and boxes of cigarettes. Thousands of Zimbabweans in search of a better life illegally cross into the neighboring countries of Botswana and South Africa. The majority of them go to South Africa. Some of those who cross illegally just lack valid documentation, while others are involved in smuggling goods, circumventing the border officials. There are reports that smuggling has increased this year under the long COVID-19 lockdown between the two countries. Sociopolitical analyst Effie Ncube, however, says the economic crisis in Zimbabwe is the trigger for the rise in smuggling. He says the increased smuggling makes it harder for the two governments to keep the spread of COVID-19.
Given the COVID-19 situation, the crossing of Zimbabweans into South Africa using undesignated points, and the fact that they travel using transport that does not observe social distancing, that is unlikely also to observe other COVID-19 health protocols, it raises a very serious challenge of cross-border imported infections, imported from Zimbabwe into South Africa and imported from South Africa into Zimbabwe. It makes control of COVID-19 a huge challenge for both countries, especially for Zimbabwe, given the fact that South Africa is heavily infected with COVID-19.
Observers such as Ncube say that with the onset of the festive season, thousands of migrant workers and undocumented persons will want to cross the border from South Africa. He says that could prove a nightmare for Zimbabwe's collapsed health delivery system. The chairperson of the Zimbabwe-South Africa Association, Ngabuto Mabena, says the authorities must clamp down heavily on criminal elements flouting the rules.
The economic meltdown is global, so we cannot justify any criminal acts because of the economic meltdown. This is why we're saying anyone caught doing any illegal activity must be arrested, because the entire world is facing economic meltdown given COVID-19. While we understand that those that left Zimbabwe left because of economic acts, so we're calling on law enforcement agencies to arrest these syndicates.
Mabena expressed his members' apprehensions with the rising numbers of COVID-19 infections in schools within the country and the Matabeleland region in particular.
Particularly in boarding schools, we do not know what the cause is, though there's speculation that during lockdown, some students came to join their parents in South Africa, crossed the border illegally. We've been seeing people crossing the border illegally to South Africa and to Zimbabwe from South Africa. So one would have suspected that because there's no check at the illegal crossings, it is easier then for people to transmit or to export coronavirus from South Africa to Zimbabwe.
Michael Ndiweni is the chief executive of the Bulawayo Vendors and Traders Association. He says many people are forced to cross the border illegally.
There is a problem with accessing a passport. A number of people who applied for passports last year, they have not received them. And a lot of people will be shortchanged because they will not be able to cross borders to go and either sell or buy goods. And it is our plea that the government must speed up the process of issuing out passports so that people are able to cross the borders. The issue of delaying in crossing borders has resulted in the increased number of people using some of these illegal points, and also that borders were closed and people were not allowed to cross borders.
Zimbabwe is set to reopen its border to ordinary commuters who join the commercial vehicles, whose drivers already complain about a bottleneck in trying to clear vehicles at the regional entry and exit point. The travelers will be required to produce COVID-19 certificates on both sides of the border. Observers such as Ncube believe this will create even more problems for border officials as the festive season traffic peaks. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo.
The European Union wants to build cooperation on migration with Morocco. According to the French news agency, AFP, EU Commissioner for Home Affairs, Ylva Johansson, has said she has made a mandate to sit down to negotiate readmission and visa facilitation with the government of Morocco. Johansson led an EU delegation to Rabat for a two-day visit to the North African country. She told reporters that Europe is an aging society that needs migrants, but European citizens are a bit afraid of irregular arrivals. The EU's fight against irregular migration has been at the heart of its diplomatic efforts to the Maghreb region. The EU has mobilized $413 million for migration management in Morocco since 2018. South Africa's big clothing retailers are working towards buying and producing more locally manufactured goods than cheap Chinese imports by 2030. They've committed to a government job creation master plan signed almost a year ago, and various role players say there are already signs of improvement. Reporter Vicky Stark has more.
The South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union says both legal and illegal Chinese imports have increased significantly over the years, threatening the local industry. The union's National Industrial Policy Officer, Etienne Flock, says the master plan is an attempt to combat this. And while there's still lots of work to be done over the next decade, the big retailers are making an effort.
In the master plan, we've committed as stakeholders and government to create 120,000 new jobs in the retail clothing, textile, footwear and leather sector, of which about 70,000 are in the manufacturing part. So ultimately, that's what we will be measured against, is not just, you know, buying a little bit for more here and there locally, but overall trying to ensure a major shift from largely importing to largely procuring locally.
Johan Bard, Executive Director of the South African Apparel Association, which represents manufacturers, says the big retailers are seeing that with some products, it's better for their bottom line to be able to source locally so they can quickly correct bad fashion calls and cash in on trends.
Your buyers don't make a call in advance of a season and then load containers full from China that takes 3 months to get here. And when you stack your shelves, you find that the green sells more than the purple, or the black sells more than the yellow. And then you sit with distressed stock at the end of the season. But more importantly, you can't replenish those items or colorways that have outsold your available stock. You can only turn on and turn off what is going through your pull points every day if you have a domestic supply chain.
One retailer who saw the value of quick response locally manufactured goods about 7 years ago already is the Foschini Group. Their CEO, Anthony Thunstrom, says last year just over 41% of their total units sold were from China versus 30% local, with the balance mostly from other Southern African development countries like Lesotho, Swaziland and Mauritius. He says the group has two factories in South Africa and plans to open more. Thunstrom says they've bought state-of-the-art equipment and have a training academy for staff.
In a country that's got chronically high unemployment, it makes absolute sense to try to employ more people through local production. We currently employ close to 10,000 people in our local supply chain. In South Africa, the economic multiplier effect is probably 7 or 8 times. You know, you're positively impacting, you know, on that basis, 70 to 80,000 people.
Of course, like many others, this sector is suffering from the effects of COVID-19. The South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union says about 10,000 of the 90,000 pre-pandemic jobs in the industry have been lost. They're hoping that with the big retailers' dedication to the jobs creation master plan, they can weather the storm and get back on track to achieving 65% local procurement by 2030. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.